But if you close your eyes.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. You're listening to This Week Again. I'm your host, Suzanne Posel. And welcome to season four. We're going to start off this show with Israel. Got to be starting something with Iran. Move on to why Moscow Marge is standing for Russia over aid to Ukraine. And follow all of that up with a recap of Donnie Kahn's terrible, horrible, no good, very bad first week on trial in New York. Let's begin, shall we? On April Fool's Day in 2024, Israel did something pretty foolish when they bombed the Iranian embassy in Syria, killing four military advisors and three senior commanders of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, and then sat back and was like, and what? For like 12 days until the highly anticipated and very publicly telegraphed for a week in advance response from Iran.
Breaking at this moment, Israel under fire from Iran.
It's just raining rockets with those sirens blaring out.
We do effectively have World War III in progress.
In the end, there was almost no damage as Israel, the U.S. and other allies shot down 99% of Iran's missiles and drones.
Jordan's Air Force also intercepted and shot down dozens of drones that violated its airspace. And we're on their way to Israel.
And we've now learned that Saudi Arabia and the UAE provided real-time intelligence that helped track the incoming missiles.
In a statement, Iran said it now considers the matter concluded.
And why wouldn't they? The U.S., the UAE, and Jordan combined forces to intercept 99% of Iran's 120 ballistic missiles, 30 cruise missiles, and 170 drone rain of terror before they even got to Israel. In fact, only five ballistic missiles got through to hit Israeli soil, causing barely mentionable damage in return for killing seven Iranians. So, after the tit-for-tat was over, President Biden, France's president, and the British prime minister told Israel's genocidal maniac of a leader to cut it out. Leave Iran alone, and any retaliation they take from this point on, hey, you're on your own, kid. And considering Israel wouldn't have survived Iran's attack without the U.S. coming to save their arses, it came as a complete shock to everyone when Israel decided to double down.
Israel has said that, quote, there will be a response to the Iranian missile attack, that coming from the Israeli military chief.
Israel's war cabinet favors retaliation for the massive Iranian drone and missile strike. Critics of Netanyahu say an escalation of the conflict with Iran actually benefits Netanyahu as it has distracted attention away from his domestic problems, where he faces growing anger over his failure to bring hostages home and criticism of his mishandling of the war in Gaza.
Because when you are the child of Holocaust survivors who's gone to the dark side, you need something for everyone to complain about while you systematically extinct an entire group of people. So sure as shit, it took Netanyahu just 6 days to punch back at Iran for defending itself against Israel's April Fool's Day surprise. Unfortunately, the details of the damage in Iran are sketchy. Iran admits to loud sounds being heard in the city of Isfahan, but Iran keeps several military installations there, and so far no damage to those military targets is being reported out of Iran. Israel also hit targets in Iraq and Syria, because why not? They're close enough to Iran, aren't they? And by the way, Syria is reporting the attack was barely a thing, giving small dick energy, which is completely expected considering the schmeckle running Israel right now. And while we wait for Israel's next move in their ongoing campaign to start a war in the Middle East, Americans are taking to the streets and shutting down bridges, hoping someone will please give a shit about Israel killing Palestinians.
Breaking news right now, 8:43 on a busy Monday morning. The commute snarled because of protesters shutting down lanes across the Golden Gate Bridge.
Protests that are, you know, in effect, shutting down many Bay Area bridges this morning.
Pro-Palestine protesters have blocked access to SeaTac Airport.
Protesters blocking the freeway here, the entryway, really, into the airport. You can see there's lines and rows of cars here. Police are here as well. It all started around 2:30 today, but just moments ago, we've seen people, police, you know, arresting these protesters.
Chicago police said they arrested more than 50 people today between protests downtown and near O'Hare this morning.
This was just one small piece of an international day of action for Gaza.
Protesters stopped traffic on the Golden Gate Bridge for 5 hours using human chains and holding signs that said, "Stop the world for Gaza." In Chicago, protesters obstructed traffic at O'Hare Airport, holding signs that said, "Stop sending bombs." These demonstrations not only made national news, they also made maggots upset. Like the pasty descendant of colonizers from Arkansas and aptly named Mr. Tom Cotton, who would like the unhinged aggression Israel has been displaying lately find its way into the Kool-Aid-drenched minds of his voter base. Because according to Mr. Cotton, these peaceful pro-Palestinian demonstrators of late need to be stopped by any violent means necessary. Roll tape.
Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas suggesting Americans take matters into their own hands when it comes to pro-Palestinian protesters.
You have to get to these criminals early. If something like this happened in Arkansas on a bridge there, let's just say I think there'd be a lot of very wet criminals that have been tossed overboard, not by law enforcement, but by the people whose road they're blocking. If they glued their hands to a car or the pavement, well, probably pretty painful to have their skin ripped off. And I would encourage most people anywhere that get stuck behind criminals like this who are trying to block traffic to take matters in their own hands. It's time to put an end to this nonsense. It's time for private citizens who are the ones being inconvenienced here when they're confronted with these protesters just to solve matters on their own before the police even show up.
And that right there is apparently the best Arkansas voters could come up with. But then again, these people swear their state's name isn't pronounced Arkansas, clearly denying their pirate heritage. So the state is sussy at best, which tracks with one of their senators calling for protesters to be thrown off bridges and run over in the street. Because if even one white douchebag is inconvenienced to bring awareness to the genocidal murder of nearly 34,000 men, women, and children who are not Hamas, then do we even have a country? Oh, and while we're on the subject of elected representatives serving a foreign government's needs while in Congress, I'm sure you're aware of Speaker Evangelical Johnson's battle to keep his current position because he wants to pass a few foreign aid packages and ban TikTok, which was snuggled deep into a bill authorizing the seizure of Russian oligarchs' assets and some other things that were surprisingly voted for, considering I was sure Republicans didn't want to upset their Rusky overlords. But hey, what do I know? I guess we're banning TikTok. It was so important to them. And the Dems too. But that can of worms is for a previous show that you can check out after this one is done. For now, let's focus our attention on the funding for Ukraine that has Moscow Marge from Georgia beside herself, like the middle-aged cliche she is, with all her pearl clutching because Ukraine is receiving $61 billion with a lot of help from the Dems.
Mike Johnson and Marjorie Taylor Greene on a collision course. Greene says she will take down Johnson over a high-stakes vote on Ukraine aid that Johnson says he is going to bring to a vote in days. It is a vote that Greene says could end Johnson's speakership. But he's going up against a major opponent who does not want to give another cent to Ukraine, somebody who has Russia's backing.
Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is proposing for the U.S. to withdraw from NATO. She believes that Americans should help Putin win.
Ever since Marjorie Taylor Greene started speaking out against helping Ukraine, Russian state television can't get enough of her.
Moscow Marjorie is focused now on this Ukraine issue and getting her talking points from the Kremlin and making sure that she is popular and she is getting a lot of coverage.
That's right, kiddies. Moscow Marge has been putting in overtime, screeching at the top of her lungs about how terrible it would be to fund Ukraine's efforts to stave off Russia's colonization strategy. She stood on the House floor, crying about how any member of Congress who votes to fund Ukraine should be forced to enlist in their army, and prove to everyone that Moron the Goblin is the world's only Jewish space laser expert, when she demanded the development of, quote, space laser technology on the southwest border. Because Israel has the Iron Dome system that shoots ground-to-air missiles at predetermined targets that look like lasers being shot in the air, according to the Georgia Trailer Park Queen. Makes me wonder how many rubles it costs to get this maggot to stand for Putin like he's the short king she's been waiting for. But if you think Dog the Bounty Hunter is the only Russian cheerleader in Congress, think again.
Congressman McCall made a comment this week about what he says sounds like Russian propaganda from some conservative media and why it's so difficult to explain to Republican voters why supporting Ukraine is important. He told Julia Yaffe, quote, I think Russian propaganda has made its way into the United States, unfortunately, and it's infected a good chunk of my party's base. He singled out primetime shows on conservative channels.
House Intelligence Committee Chair Mike Turner says he's heard some of his Republican colleagues repeat Russian propaganda on the House floor.
We see directly coming from Russia attempts to mask communications that are anti-Ukraine and pro-Russia messages, some of which we even hear being uttered on the House floor. I mean, there are members of Congress today. Now, to the extent that this propaganda takes hold, it makes it more difficult for us to really see this as an authoritarian versus democracy battle, which is what it is. We know that authoritarian regimes never stop when they start an aggression.
Well, duh. Just take a look at what Israel's doing to Palestinians while fucking around with Iran at the same time. But I digress. Since 2016, the Republican Party has been under new management. It started with Russia using the NRA to funnel campaign cash into the coffers of Republicans running for that election season. And again in 2020, Russia helped the maggotiest of maggots get seated in Congress and down ballot because states' rights and all that bullshit. Which is why we're hearing Republicans repeating Kremlin talking points about Ukraine.
The Washington Post has some explosive reporting today on newly revealed documents from inside Vladimir Putin's government, show how Russia is seeking to subvert Western support for Ukraine and disrupt the domestic politics of the United States and European countries through propaganda campaigns and supporting isolationist and extremist policies, fomenting division over Ukraine because it wants to weaken America's role in the world. Specifically calls on Russia to continue to facilitate the coming to power of isolationist right-wing forces in America. Russia very much wants the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world to continue doing exactly what they're doing because it serves Russia's interests. Earlier this week, Marjorie Taylor Greene parroted Vladimir Putin's central lie, justifying his invasion of Ukraine by calling the Ukrainian government Nazis.
Putin is spending a lot of money here in the United States and in Europe trying to undermine support for Ukraine, trying to support individuals who are trying to argue against Ukraine funding. Putin has made clear that he's not going to stop at Ukraine. Very quickly, he could be moving on to a NATO ally.
You bet your sweet ass he would. Little Pootie Poot's favorite go-to fantasy when he's all alone in a regular-sized bed is to make Russia the USSR again. In order to do that, he's got to take back the 15 countries that have been independently operating since the fall of Russia back in the late 1900s. Countries like Poland, Hungary, and Ukraine. And because the effort to make Ukraine Russia again isn't going as well as little Vlad would like, he's paying millions of reappropriated rubles to poorly educated idiots like Georgia's worst decision since seceding from the Union to spread the word about Ukraine. Like how Russia is trying to stamp out the Nazis running Ukraine, regardless of the fact that Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, is a practicing Jew. But you know what? Who cares about all of that when you've got big problems right here at home? For example, the supreme disappointment recently decided to ignore a case involving protest organizers being sued for whatever happens at their protest because threatening legal action against everyday broke-ass Americans is one way to quell free speech. But then the jesters at the bogus SCOTUS thought it would be lots of fun to help out the insurrectionists convicted and soon to be convicted of participating in a failed coup on January 6 by hearing their complaint over the law that was used to prosecute them. Roll tape.
Toronto, the Supreme Court. The Justice Appeared divided over the charges against some of the January 6 protesters in arguments yesterday. That's a decision when it comes, it could affect Donald Trump's federal election interference case.
The U.S. Supreme Court is considering whether federal prosecutors correctly charged more than 350 people at the January 6th Capitol riot with felony obstruction of an official proceeding.
The conservative justices on the Supreme Court were sharply skeptical of the way the Department of Justice has been using a felony obstruction law that was written to address financial crimes, but has been used more than 300 times to prosecute January 6 defendants, including Donald Trump.
The court's conservative majority appeared sympathetic to the police officer's case.
Would a heckler in today's audience qualify, or at the State of the Union address, would pulling a fire alarm before a vote qualify for 20 years in federal prison?
The court's liberal members focused on the plain text, which makes it a crime to obstruct, influence, or impede any official proceeding.
There are ways, multiple ways, in which the drafters could have made it clear that they intended to also operate only in the sphere of evidence spoliation. But it doesn't do that.
In what can only be described as a solid Tamil Team 6, the maggot jesters at the Supreme Intelligence questioned why a law was used to prosecute people who obstructed an official proceeding by charging them with a law that discusses obstructing an official proceeding and how you shouldn't be able to do that. See, the law used by prosecutors was born from the Enron scandal, making it a criminal offense to obstruct an official action already in place. For example, when the trailer park trash took over the Capitol on January 6th, the Congress was holding a certification of the 2020 votes in ceremony. That official action was stopped because hundreds of poorly educated assholes were storming the House of Representatives and our elected officials were running for their lives in undisclosed locations. So you can see how it would make sense to charge the insurrectionists with obstructing an official proceeding, because that's literally what they did. But the maggot jesters on the bogus SCOTUS would like nothing more than to declare prosecutors applied the wrong law to the J6ers, because not only does that mean they'd be released from jail and current cases would grind to a halt, and the orange-tinted carnival barker who invited them to the insurrection would have his charges by Jack Smith dismissed as well. Not good for democracy, but hella good for Mayor McTreason. And speaking of democracy, the first week of Genghis Khan's hush money trial commenced in New York City. This is a criminal case involving $130,000 paid to a porn star named Stormy Daniels so she would stay hush-hush about the time Girth Vader asked her to smack him on the ass with a rolled-up Forbes magazine before showing her his mushroom dick. Sounds like an interesting plot point, doesn't it? Apparently not, because Don Snorleone could not stay awake during his first day of trial.
Yeah, I have to ask, you guys have been, at the Times, have been live blogging this event. And 40 minutes ago, you wrote an observation that I was very surprised. Trump appears to be sleeping. His head keeps dropping down and his mouth goes slack.
Well, Jake, he appeared to be asleep, and, you know, repeatedly his head would fall down. His jaw kept falling on his chest.
Katie Fang reported, as Judge Mershon is explaining that the burden of proof is on the prosecution and that the standard is beyond a reasonable doubt, Trump's eyes are closed. He might be thinking or sleeping, but his eyes are shut.
Optics of all this and the sustained eye resting that apparently happened in the courtroom. I mean, I do feel like if you call your opponent Sleepy Joe, you have one job. Stay for the safe. Rest of the campaign, yeah. Which is like, you got to like clockwork orange those puppies, like open at all times.
I'm with Chris on this one. Part of the Nodfather's shtick on the campaign trail is to go on and on about how tired Joe looks all the time. And here we have Sleepy Don snoring and drooling all the way through his first day of trial. And I know it's hard to stay awake when you've been rage-truthing on your knockoff Twitter website at 3 a.m. while sitting on the shitter and rummaging through classified documents you somehow still have. But come on. We're talking about a case in which a lawyer you hired to pay Stormy Daniels for her silence during the 2016 election has already served jail time for this very crime. The least you could do is stay awake. Meanwhile, on day two of Trumple Foreskin's hush money case, jury selection went to shit thanks to Jesse Waters and others at Fox Not a News Channel who exposed every juror's private lives all over national television, causing this to happen.
The first batch of 96 potential jurors was whittled down to just about a third by the end of Monday. This morning, several more were dismissed, one because she had a scheduling conflict, another wasn't feeling well.
A juror had a wedding to get to.
Another individual said that they're concerned about their dog and was promptly dismissed.
Part of the day was spent examining prospective jurors' old social media posts about Trump while the former president looked on. One juror was dismissed for having posted, "Lock him up," and another for sharing an AI video in which Trump appeared to say, "I'm dumb as f-." Trump seemed to scowl at a 2016 meme showing photos of him and Barack Obama with the caption, "I don't think this is what they meant by orange is the new black."
Oh, contraire, my good lady. I think that's exactly what they meant. Of course, some who were dismissed outright from the jury pool were interviewed by the media immediately and said they were surprised Trader Orange wasn't as orange as they thought he would be in real life. Maybe the Vanity Manity is using a different bronzer since he's going to be closer to other people than he might normally be, you know, sitting just a few feet away from everyday people. What's important here is that jurors selected for this case are putting their lives on the line to fulfill their civic duty.
The judge has dismissed one of the seven jurors seated on Tuesday after she expressed concerns about her ability to be fair and impartial.
One of the seven impaneled jurors has already been excused after expressing concerns that aspects of her identity had been compromised.
Juror number two appears to have been excused, telling the judge after sleeping on it, she didn't believe that she could be fair and unbiased.
She talked to the judge. She says that she was excused after she told the judge that, quote, aspects of her identity have already been out there in the public. Yesterday alone, she says she had friends, colleagues, and family push things to her phone, questioning if she was the juror. She went on to say that she felt intimidated.
The judge concerned about the anonymity of the jurors.
And I don't blame that woman one bit. Considering the amount of death threats to themselves, family, and friends, judges and prosecutors have to deal with on a daily basis with keeping Donnie Dunscap accountable, everyday people just don't have time for that. It's terrifying knowing the gun-loving, got-nothing-better-to-do maggots could be lurking anywhere, knowing more about you than you know even about yourself. Because let's be honest, frumpy dump supporters are criminals.
Juror number four, according to a presentation just made in open court by one of the ADAs in the case, apparently the person with the same name as juror number four, who said that this is the person, by the way, that said they were found Trump fascinating and mysterious. That person apparently had a prior arrest that they did not disclose throughout the voir dire process. Apparently it was an arrest in the 1990s in Westchester, New York for, quote, tearing down political advertisements.
What did I tell you? Such fine people those maggots are, breaking the law and lying about it just to get on a jury. It's almost like these people and the slob father are cut from the same discounted cloth. So it should come as no surprise to anyone that at the end of the day two of the Hush Money trial, Loose Lips Don waddled straight out of the courtroom to the press waiting outside to admit to everyone on national television that he actually committed the crime he's been accused of. Roll tape.
This is a trial that should have never been brought. I was paying a lawyer and marked it down as a legal expense, some accountant, I didn't know, marked it down as a legal expense. That's exactly what it was. And you get indicted over that? So check that out, legal expense. It's called legal expense. That's what you're supposed to call it. Nobody has ever seen anything like it.
Yeah, well, you got us there. Normally, you don't see a defendant march out of a courtroom to confess to the crime he's accused of on the second day of the trial, but here we are. And good thing, too, because according to reporters who were inside the courtroom, something is rotten in New York. And by something, I mean Schindler himself. Between falling asleep and snoring during proceedings, Donnie Depenz has been crop dusting the courtroom. So much so, his lawyers have been looking on with disgust and a little bit of nausea whenever they're close to Dawn of the Eternal Stench. But leave it up to the last day of the first week of the Hush Money case to be a banger. Literally.
Breaking news around the trial of former President Donald Trump. The very disturbing incident after someone apparently set themselves on fire.
50 yards from the entrance to this courthouse where Donald Trump is currently inside, and just about 2 minutes after a full jury was impaneled, a man set himself on fire here in an area that is what they call the First Amendment area, where protesters are able to assemble.
Our team outside the Manhattan courthouse just witnessed a disturbing scene. A man set himself on fire. Historic moment.
It was. A group of people who were standing near an area that once had a Trump flag that was waving in the wind in the courtyard area. Onlookers saw some sort of pamphlets go up in the air, began to scream. I saw a man lift his arm and appeared to put something on his body, followed by flames that engulfed his entire person. An immediate smell came around from not only some form of a chemical accelerant, but also from the scent of burning flesh.
There is no joke here. A 37-year-old man from St. Augustine, Florida, traveled to New York to set himself on fire outside of the Trump trial courthouse. Initial reports showed this man was not necessarily a maggot, but definitely a rewards member of the Crackpot Conspiracy Club. The New York version of Burning Man had a manifesto prepared, which was a pamphlet he scattered in the park before he lit it up. This pamphlet talked about how there are fascists on both sides working for a cabal that is poised to unleash an apocalypse on the entire world. And this man was unfortunately mortally disturbed. It is very sad that his motivation and drive toward achieving a goal was misdirected by a real-life Satarin who is still screaming about chemicals in the water turning the frickin' frogs gay. And that's all I have to say about that. New episodes of This Week Again air every Sunday. And don't forget, Sundays at 6 Ohio time, you can re-listen to this very show on Crowtown Radio. And if that's not enough for you, once a week, you can catch me on Facepalm America, where we make fun of the news in real time on a recorded podcast. And you can follow This Week Again on social media wherever you can find us. Places like Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for listening to this show and to Dur for now.